Welcome, everybody, to the April 11, 2011 meeting of the Senate Committee on Business, Transportation, and Economic Development. We're going to hop around here a little bit. Senator Motis Anderson.
Oh, I forgot to open the work session.
On what number?
On Senate Bill 36. And Richard, do you want to do a quickie?
Senate Bill 36 requires the OLCC to make an unfavorable determination on license application in cases where a local jurisdiction submits in writing an unfavorable recommendation on the license. We heard this bill originally on 217. We also have a dash 2 and a dash 3 amendment. And there's no revenue and minimal fiscal on all of it.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Senator Lori Montes Anderson, representing Fairview, Gresham, Troutdale, and Wood Village. And basically, I only want you to look at the dash 3 amendments. The others and the original bill are gone. And basically, this deals with OLCC licenses. And the only, if you look on page 2 of the dash 3s, the only change we're making in statute, basically it just expands the number of reasons that OLCC can deny a liquor license. And the restaurants are on board, they are not opposed, and OLCC is not opposed. It really does limit everything from the original bill. And this is a bill requested by the City of Fairview.
Questions of the Senator? Senator Starr.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. So as that relates, as I look at this amendment, it looks that it could be very, very, very broad. So any of the laws, general or local, of this state or any other state.
But if it is substantially related to the fitness and ability of the applicant to lawfully carry out the activities under the license. And so OLCC would have jurisdiction and not the local communities as the original bill was.
Any additional questions? Thank you, Senator. We'll let you go back to work.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on 36-3, SB 36? Seeing none, we're going to recess on 36-3 and open a work session on House Joint Memorial 1. Richard?
You want to open a public hearing?
Public hearing. Just got in the session and moving things. Getting a little anxious. Senator Richardson?
House Joint Memorial 1 urges Congress to ease the visa application process for Chinese visitors to the United States.
Mm-hmm. Representative.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Joint Memorial 1 passed with a unanimous vote from the House. It was a committee bill there, and it is designed to inform the members of Congress of the need to reform the way that Chinese citizens can obtain visas to come to America. In China presently, if you want to go to Australia or Canada or Japan, you put together your packet of information and you send it in with a fee of about $32, and you wait, and they give you a visa or they turn you down. If you want to come to America, you have to have that same packet of information. You need to schedule. Should I continue?
Please.
Talking about House Joint. You need to schedule a face-to-face meeting in one of six locations or embassies that we have in the entire nation of China, and you pay $140. You wait weeks for an invitation or for an appointment, and then you go and you have between 1 and 2 minutes of FaceTime in front of an embassy staffer, who then determines whether or not you can go get a visa to come to the United States or not. And that is such a burdensome approach, and that we are asking that our federal government will reconsider the process so that we can utilize more up-to-date techniques and be in better competition with other countries to enable Chinese visitors who want to come to America to do it without such an expensive and burdensome process. This is all that House Joint Memorial 1 is designed to do, and we would ask that the committee hear it and work it today if possible.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Well, thank you, Co-Chair Richardson, for bringing this bill forward, this joint memorial. Here in my hands is the latest copy of Oregon Business Magazine, and right on the front is the China Connection. And it's a whole article about investment in Oregon, investment in creating jobs by the Chinese business community. And I thought it was timely, given that we have this joint memorial before us here today. It is an issue that the federal government needs to take up and needs to take seriously. You know, for all the reasons that Representative Richardson has brought forward, and I'm wholeheartedly in support of it as well.
Anyone else? Senator Stark?
I just want to thank you for bringing the memorial. I have experience going from this way, that way. It's really easy. My daughter's getting a visa to travel to China. We're getting that application in today or tomorrow. She travels in a month. It's easy to do. If you want to get from here to there, we need to reciprocate, make it easy for our Chinese friends to be able to come to the U.S.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, our number one export partner is China. The top four states out of all 50 states for exporting to China are California, Washington, Texas, and Oregon. And we are perfectly situated to have Oregon become the gateway to America for Chinese tourists, investors, and travelers. And it's very important to our economic growth that we expand this trade, that they want to buy American goods, and so we feel they should buy goods and services from Oregon. And this is one additional piece of legislation to help show the Chinese that we're serious in improving these relationships and requesting from Washington, D.C. that they will take the action necessary to promote this relationship.
Real briefly, Mr. Chair.
Senator Edwards.
Okay. This will be my final comment. I had heard a lot of horror stories about how difficult it is to get a visa to come to the U.S. if even for business purposes in China. So on my last trip to Beijing, I went to the U.S. Embassy and had a discussion with them about the visa policy, and they made it really clear that they have a guilty until proven innocent attitude. I mean, they assume that whoever's applying for a visa is doing it for nefarious reasons, and you've got 2 minutes in front of a visa officer to convince them otherwise. And so it's not the way to start a good relationship with somebody that you want to be doing business with Oregon. So.
Okay. Anything else?
Good bill should pass.
Thank you, Representative.
Charge.
Let's go. Thank you. Well, we might want to ask if there's anybody else who wants to testify on this bill.
Thank you. No one else?
Okay. We will close public hearing and open work session on HJM 1. The chair moves adoption of is that the right language? Adoption of HJM 1. Move to the floor with the due pass.
I guess adopt.
To adopt.
To adopt.
Right. To adopt. All right. Any further discussion now that we have the language right?
Do we?
Do adopt.
No.
All right. Try it again.
Mr. Chair, I would move HJM 1 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation.
There we go. All right. Discussion. Hearing none. Is there any opposition? HJM1 is moved to the floor with a do adopt. Carrier is Senator Atkinson. Now we got a work session on Senate Bill 586. Senator Whitsitt. Welcome, Senator. You're on.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator Doug Whitsitt, representing District 28. I want to thank you for holding a work session on Senate Bill 586. I'm here for a simple reason, to support the Dash 3 amendment. As I read it, the amended bill would read on the line 13, solar electric or solar thermal system and passive solar energy systems or conservation techniques that achieve a significant reduction in energy usage. I think that's a very good addition. I would also be less likely to support the Dash 4 amendments because, as I read the Dash 4 amendment, they eliminate conservation techniques that achieve energy reduction. That was really not the intent of the bill. The intent of the bill really is to get the best bang for the green energy buck for the taxpayer, and I believe that conservation techniques are a good part of that. And that's all I have.
Talking about the Dash 2s then, right?
Three.
That's three.
Three. Questions to the Senator?
Charge.
Charge. Don't see any.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on this?
Mr. Chair, what amendments, what set of amendments are we looking at?
We're looking at the Dash 3s. So are you moving the Dash 3s?
No.
The Chair will move the Dash 3 amendments. Discussion. See none. Is there any opposition? Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 586 adopted. Chair moves Senate Bill 586 as amended by the Dash 3s to the floor with a due pass. Discussion. Is there any opposition? There is none. Senate Bill 586, as amended by the Dash 3s, is moved to the floor.
Giddy up.
With a due pass recommendation, Senator Whitsitt will carry. All right, now where do we want to go?
Start at the top of the page.
Top of the page? You want to start at the top?
Well, makes it easy.
For the record, for those in the audience who are here, we do not have the final amendments and fiscals on Senate Bill 795. Senate Bill 438, Senate Bill 506, and I think that's it. So we will not be working those bills today. We'll carry them over. All right, so we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 775. Richard.
Senate Bill 775 prohibits a manufacturer, distributor, or importer of motor vehicles from requiring a franchisee to enter into a site control agreement. It prohibits a manufacturer, distributor, or importer from denying a dealer a right to return parts or accessories that are in good, resellable condition sold through a required automated ordering system. It prohibits threats to impose detriment or withhold benefit in exchange for the dealer's waiver of a right in which the dealer is entitled. It modifies the time frame for conducting audits of paid claims for dealer compensation, and it establishes chargebacks may be only imposed with proper notice and must be based on a material deficiency and non-compliance. There's also a Dash 1 amendment, and I believe there are some people that testify on that if necessary. And there's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay. And do we have a sign-up sheet or somebody wants?
No, this is a work session, so
okay.
The supporters are talking. Paul Crossgrove.
Mr. Geller and Mr. Grove, you want to comment on this at all?
I don't have the dashes.
Oh, you don't have them. I might
have them
in this stack.
Mr. Chair, only if there's questions.
Anybody have any questions?
What is the dash?
It's the dash.
Sure, I think
dash one. Dash one. Yeah, dash one.
Gallagher and Cosgrove. I've never seen them like ties.
Yeah, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Do you and Cosgrove own ties, neckties?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, my mother thought when I went to law school that it was a good thing I'd get be the first person in our family to get to wear a tie, and I disappointed her.
Can you speak for Cosgrove? I've never seen him
wear one. I'm sure he disappointed his mother too, Senator Atkinson.
It's not lost on the Senate Business and Transportation and Economic Development Committee. Thank you very much.
All right, so we're in work session. Chair moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 775. Discussion.
Can teach me
is there any opposition? Dash one's to Senate Bill 775 are adopted. Chair moves Senate Bill 775 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Discussion. Is there any opposition? Senate Bill 775, as amended by the dash ones, is moved to the floor with a due pass. Senator Edwards, would you carry this one?
Sure.
Senator Edwards is a carrier. Okay, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 775, and we'll open a work session, public hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 17. Where's Senator Pruzanski? There he is. Public hearing. Public hearing is what I meant to say. You're on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I'm here and asking you to give support to SJM 17. Seated to my right is Jake Gibbs. Jake is going to go into greater detail. He contacted my office earlier, I believe it was late spring, early summer, regarding a decision that was made at the U.S. Department of Labor, which basically restricted the use of teens in dealing with youth employment and force-related jobs, specifically when dealing with fire prevention and fighting those type of fires. Not that they are directly involved in the actual front line of fires, but they serve in unique secondary positions, and it's an opportunity for many youth in rural Oregon in the counties of Douglas and Coos and others around to actually be participants and being able to learn let's say good work culture and being part of a process that is part of their culture. With that, I want to introduce to you Jake Gibbs, who will give you a little bit more great detail, but I do want to acknowledge to the committee that Boley has been involved in this legislation, as well as Senator Merkley's office, and we really want to thank Kate Newhall and the Department of Bureau of Labor and Industries for her continued efforts in kind of being a facilitator between the state and the feds. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Jake Gibbs. I am a forester with Lone Rock Timber in Roseburg, Oregon. I also serve on the Douglas and Coos Forest Protective Associations. As the Senator outlined, in July of last year, the Department of Labor made a final ruling on the hazardous occupation delineation or determination for forest firefighting, and that in turn resulted in youth not being able to work in a firefighting position. Since the early 1970s, Douglas and Coos has employed 16 and 17 year olds in a youth firefighter support position, employing up to 60 youth in Douglas County and upwards of 20 in Coos. Very economically depressed areas. These are positions that there aren't a whole lot of youth opportunities for employment anyway, much less in one that's very apropos for the neighborhood. So I've contacted a variety of folks trying to determine how we can maintain the ability to provide employment opportunities for youth. Senator Pruzanski and many elected officials throughout Oregon have been very supportive, but as you can appreciate, a final rule determination by the Department of Labor that affects 16 and 17-year-olds in Oregon may not raise high on their to-do list. So I would ask that you would move this joint memorial forward to raise attention to our federal partners that this is indeed something that needs addressing. And with that, I'd answer any questions if there were any.
Thank you. Questions of, yes, Senator Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jake, to your knowledge, have any as it's termed, support, I guess they're in support positions. Have any support positions ever come into peril during, I mean, you know, we hear about losing wildland fighters from time to time, actually out on the fire line when something happens. What about support crew personnel?
Chair Beyer, Senator Edwards, no. In our records, there have been no fatalities or serious injuries to our youth in the years we've been keeping records.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could, Senator Edwards, my understanding, this dates back 20, 30, 40 years that they've been involved, and my understanding is that the positions that they hold is truly secondary and either getting material and supplies ready to go in on the for the front line or after the fire has been secure, they do some mop-up, but they have never been put in a peril where they have been put at harm or even had to be evacuated from the area that they are assigned to work.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That's all I had signed up. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on Senate Joint Memorial 17? Seeing none,
are
we in Washington? Oops, put that in record.
We did get written testimony from Kate Newhall from Bureau of Labor and Industries, Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries, in support of the measure.
Open the work session on Senate Joint Memorial 17. Senator Atkinson.
I would move Senate Joint Memorial 17 to the floor with the do adopt recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Joint Memorial 17 to the floor with the do adopt recommendation. Discussion. Is there any opposition? There is none. Senate Joint Memorial 17 is moved to the floor unanimously with a do adopt recommendation. Alrighty, so we're back to, we'll open on work session on Senate Bill 133.
Senate Bill 133 exempts persons applying for restricted motorcycle endorsement for operation of motorcycle with more than two wheels from meeting requirements of a motorcycle endorsement. We heard this on April 7th, and there's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Any discussion? Senator Girard.
I've been rather quiet down here. On this bill, a lot of people that ride motorbikes feel that a motorbike is something with two wheels, and they would like the definition clarified. Is it too late to get an amendment to clarify what's a motorbike, what's a...
Do we have anybody from ODOT here?
Chair Beyer, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation.
The question I have is, and Bike Pack in particular, is concerned about the fact that by authorizing three-wheelers without having an education course, that they get credit for the accidents because they're still defined as a motorbike. Is there anything we can do to change the definition so... you know, a bike is a two-wheel apparatus, and a three-wheel is a trike, and a four is a quad, and that sort of thing, so that we actually change the definition of what's what.
Chair Beyer, Representative Girard, certainly the committee could pursue that policy decision. There's a very small number of these bikes, these three-wheel bikes, where people are registered or licensed in Oregon, something like 50 or 60 a year get a license. It's a very tiny number. So the impact of any statistics to the argument that was made by the folks from a motorcycle group would be questionable how it impacts statistics, and then would be the question of, if they're not motorcycles, how are they classified? And certainly that's something that if the committee chose to pursue that, then we would have to look into how to come up with different classifications and what do we do with those folks. If they're not a motorcycle, what are they?
My understanding is that the problem is that there's a conflict, or not a conflict, if you want to stay consistent with the federal DOT definitions, and I don't know who it'd be, the F, whoever does cars and that, because I know there are a number of vehicles, I'm thinking of one that's manufactured or about to be manufactured out of Eugene, the Akimoto, that are licensed federally as a motorcycle, but they look much more like a three-wheeled car.
Chair Byer, you're correct. One of those three-wheeled cars, you'll see them in Salem occasionally, a Zap car. It's three wheels inside of a some kind of a cage, you know, hard, full-sided apparatus. It is classified as a motorcycle, but the person operating it does not need a motorcycle endorsement.
So I'm not sure of the effect of that. Of Senator Girard's question, is there an effect if you have a different definition than the Federal Department of Transportation or whoever does?
Chair Byer, I would need to investigate how those would parallel or conflict.
Senator Eck? Senator Starr.
Thank you. Just a point of information. Senator Drodd very well may be correct that we need to define motorcycles at some point in the statute, but based on the relating clause in this bill, I'm not sure that it's possible.
Ah.
In this particular piece of legislation.
Okay. Motorcycles. Is your question answered?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes, Chair.
I would tell that this if we don't fix it this year, we'll be back next year. Here's Harley Davidson for the first time. Is marketing a three-wheeled trike motorcycle. Mm-hmm. One of the most beautiful car makers of all time, the Morgan Car Company, got started making three-wheeled cars with twin V motors, and there's 80 years ago, and now they're making them again, which is a car. You can get a snowmobile with three wheels called a Can-Am, which looks like a snowmobile on the road, which is actually a motorcycle. And then you can get a Zap car, which is actually a motorcycle. It's like a car. So I think we'll be back here if we fix it this time or next time, because everything's going to three wheels. Just a thought. But the Morgan car is a car. Just that's my only amendment.
Chair Byer, Representative Atkinson, understood.
Senator.
Thank you.
Sorry, just kidding.
Sorry for the demotion. Senator and
just
Chair
kidding.
Atkinson.
Just kidding.
No, he wasn't. So it sounds like maybe over the interim you got some exploration to do.
Thank you for the direction, Chair and Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. Anything additional on this?
Harley's a Harley. Morgan's a car.
All right. So does he have amendments to this?
No.
No amendments? Is there, this we are in work session, right?
Yep. I know.
All right. So at great risk, the chair will move Senate Bill 133 to the floor with a due pass. Discussion.
I'll switch.
No discussion? Quite a bunch today. Is there any opposition? Okay. Senate Bill 133 is moved to the floor with a due pass by unanimous vote of the committee. Chair will carry. Well, let's see. Now what can we move to, Richard? Okay, we will open a work session on Senate Bill 56.
You sure forgot the line?
No, did we miss that?
Yeah.
Oh, did I miss?
442.
No, we're there.
We're in 56. Senate Bill 56 authorizes the Oregon Business Development Department to charge fees and administrative costs for program benefits incurred by the department in the administration of any program, fund, or account under the department's direction or control. There's no revenue, but there is a fiscal impact issue.
Is there amendments?
I have not received any.
No amendments? We got a staff. Department.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Chesson. I'm the deputy director of the department. You heard this bill before, and we explained our need for this related specifically to the industrial sites certification program. The fiscal impact simply relates to the expenditure authority to spend money in order to have pay for things such as studies of wetland delineation in order for us to make the package of certification complete and informative to the potential buyer.
Lynn, talking earlier today with the Director McCabe and Paul, I was asking specifically about this, knowing kind of the hard luck you're getting in Ways and Means with some of your other funding, and I just want to clarify, I left with the impression that without the ability to charge people for this certification, in fact, it may not be possible for people to get the certification just because of a lapse in process. Can you comment on that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would agree with that certainly to a certain degree. The difficult sites that we encounter where there is question, as I use an example of wetlands, to be able to engage a consultant, define that wetland, have that clear and understood that this is the mitigation problem that will be encountered and finalized is very assuring to the potential buyer that they know what the problem is and they can fix it. To the degree that an owner of a piece of property is unwilling to do that, we are willing to advance the money, get the study done, define the wetland, but we would like to be reimbursed when the owner of that property does sell that property and benefits for that investment we've made to be able to collect what we've invested back.
And that's what this bill does, is allow you to do that?
That's exactly what this bill does, yes. That's what the entire point is.
So in essence, it's making it more marketable, so there's a value to the property owner. It's a completely voluntary effort, isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, absolutely. If a owner is unwilling to have us help them, we don't have liberty to just pursue it on our own, no.
Senator Starr?
Thank you. So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So for the example you just explained, I think, you know, for this legislator at least, makes a fair amount of sense. But the language in this bill that's potentially be statutory language appears to me to be much broader than that. The department may charge fees and administrative costs for programs, for program benefits provided, grants, and loans and administrative expenses incurred by the department in the administration of any program, fund, or account under the department's directions and control. That is an amazingly broad authority that I don't know that this legislature or any legislature has provided any state agency ever. I mean, I probably am wrong. There's probably somewhere somebody has, but that's immensely broad authority.
Senator Starr, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I don't disagree with you on that. We proposed this legislative concept, and this is what legislative council provided back to us. I will say that, as you probably recall, fees have to be approved by the legislature. We have to go to the emergency board before we can implement those fees. So any through the process of this, if we advocated for a fee related to, I'll just make one up, applying for a grant, you have to pay a fee. And the legislature thought that the administrative expenses of that grant program were already supported by the admin money we received. As an example, again, a federal community development block grant. They would have within their rights and the authority and the process we have to go through. If they decided that the administrative expense was already paid for, you wouldn't approve the fee. In the particular case that I cited to you, the industrial site certification program was a specific program that initiated our thinking that in order to be able to collect those expenses that we've expended, this is the language that legislative council provided to us. If you would like to quickly move toward an amendment that would restrict it to the industrial site certification program, we have no problem with that whatsoever.
Well, I might be more comfortable supporting that rather than this, which from my perspective, creates the completely open door for the department to charge cost fees on any program that they have.
Okay. Is that feeling in the committee?
I agree.
Well, I concur. I concur with what Senator Starr said.
All righty. Well, could you work with our staff then? We'll get an amendment to do that.
Mr. Chair, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 56 and carry it over. And we'll go back to, we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 442.
Richard.
Thank you. I'm going backwards.
Senate Bill 442 requires the Oregon Department of Transportation to establish a wine country license plate program upon receipt of $10,000 from private entities. It sets fees for wine country plate. It requires ODOT, after deducting their administrative cost of the program, to deposit the proceeds of the sale of the wine country plate into an account designated by cultivating communities. We have 5, 6 amendments on this that do a wide range of things to this bill. And I have fiscals and revenues for some of them, but not all of them.
All righty.
Some of them are ready to move, some are not.
Whose amendments are these? Come on down. Which ones are yours?
Angie.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee. There is a -9 amendment that has the tourism industry support on that I would suggest. And I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
We have no fiscal on this one?
We don't.
No. And,
eight. We have
the
8 and the
10.
1s, 2s.
How come we have it on the 10s but not the 9s?
We have a dash. We have a fiscal on the -10?
We do.
What's that?
What?
What's the fiscal on
sorry,
the
Dan, are these yours?
Let me find the fiscal on that.
Yours are the 10s?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dan Jarman representing the Oregon Wine Growers Association. Yes, the -10 amendments are from the Wine Growers Association, which we support. The only difference between the -10s and the -9s are that the -10s splits funding 50-50 as opposed to the -9s, which is a 1/3, 2/3 split. And that's the only change.
And we have a fiscal on the 10s.
Yes.
How bizarre.
It was my fault. I thought the -10s were supposed to replace the -9s, but they were actually from different groups. So I put one on hold and then we left later. I apologize.
Well, question.
Senator Starr.
So, Ms. Morse, the -10s you wouldn't support. In order to move this process forward, where basically you have the wine industry and the tourism folks coming together to support getting a wine industry bill or a wine promotion bill license plate through the process, do you find your way to support the -10 so we can move this process along?
Chair Beyer, Senator Starr, thank you for the question. We certainly want to do everything we can to make sure this bill succeeds. I'd like to make just a couple quick comments regarding the difference between the -9 and the -10. The -9 is the 1/3, 2/3 split, and as Mr. Jarman just referred to, the -10 is a 50-50 split. The primary difference there is that whether money is going to wine and culinary tourism specifically as defined in statute or whether it would be going to general tourism purposes. And it is our belief that the -9 would make a stronger bill because it allows the industry to pursue any and all opportunities to drive economic impact as opposed to having sideboards put on how we define tourism. There are two pillars in the state that the state truly markets. It's culinary and recreation. And the reality is that much of the money that would go into the general tourism pool would support wine country and culinary tourism. but keeping the tourism money available for the highest and best use would be more strategic in our opinion. The difference between the dash 9 and the dash 10 would be about $51,000, and so I would refer to the committee as to what their preference would be on that. I believe that the fiscal impact on the dash 10 would be the exact same as on the dash 9 as far as how they would be administered.
Doesn't make a difference if we're going to do the nines. We still got to wait for the fiscal impact statement. But
sure,
Mr. Atkinson.
I like the dash nines, and I don't like the politics of the dash tens. Okay. I think the dash nines have been the compromise from Amendment 1 to 9, for the most part. And quite honestly, I think the dash tens are a money grab from people who didn't bring the bill to the floor, and. This is all about money, not necessarily tourism or the impact, in my opinion.
Senator Starr.
So I don't necessarily care to argue between the dash 9s and the dash 10s because I don't see much difference, quite honestly. I would like to move the bill.
Hmm?
And if we know what the fiscal is on the dash 10s, we're all thinking adults here. The fiscal on the dash 9 will be similar, if not identical. The bill's going to Ways and Means anyway, based on these numbers. I don't know. I mean, it's up to the chair, but it seems to me we could adopt one or the other and move the bill.
Others have a feeling?
I can do either the 9s or I can do the 10s.
I like the 10s.
The bill.
Well, I like the 9s. Let's take it outside.
Well, we are in work session, senators, so... You can't move the 9s, but you can move the 10s if somebody wants to move the 10s.
You can suspend the rules.
I'd move the dash 10 amendments so we can take care of this issue.
Senator Starr has moved the dash 10 amendments to Senate Bill 442. Discussion. We'd be calling the roll on this one, Carolyn.
The motion is to
adopt the dash 10 amendments to Senate Bill 442. And I will note that should we adopt these and move the bill moves to Ways and Means. Excused.
Senator Edwards?
Aye.
Senator Dodd?
Aye.
Aye.
No!
No.
Aye. Let's get the bill moving.
Again, for those in the audience, I mean, you can further massage this in Ways and Means if necessary, but at the end of the day, the bill...
Move it ahead.
...needs to keep the process moving.
Do we have a motion? The dash 10s have been adopted to Senate Bill 442. Senator Starr, would you like to move the bill?
Move the bill to Ways and Means.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 442 as adopted. Excuse me?
Do we have a due pass on that?
With a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 442 as amended by the dash 10s to Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Please call the roll.
Senator Burdick?
Excused.
Senator Edwards?
Aye.
Senator Droz?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Vice Chair Atkinson?
No.
Chair
Byers? Aye. Senate Bill 442, as amended by the dash 10s, is out of our committee with a due pass to Ways and Means. Angie, you can move this one to the next place.
Pirates get
Thank
shot.
Thank gosh, we're done with one.
Yeah, these guys just pirated that bill.
All right, now let's see. We're back to Senate Bill 554.
Beat him up over it.
Think so? Yep. Open work session on Senate Bill 554. Wake up, Senator Edwards. This is your bill.
Senate Bill 554 creates a task force on renewable generation and transmission development areas.
It sunsets the task force on a date
of convening of the 2013 legislative session. It declares an emergency and effective on passage. There's also a dash 2 amendment. And let me make sure I get the fiscals and revenues right for you.
Get the fiscals?
There is a fiscal impact on both the main bill and the dash 2 amendment, and there's no revenue impact.
Senator Edwards, do you want to comment on this?
Like the dash twos, and would like to keep the process moving.
So we move this to the floor. We are in work session. Would you like to move
Mr.
the
Mr. Chair, move the dash twos to Senate Bill 554.
Senator Edwards has moved the dash twos to Senate Bill 554. Discussion. Is there any opposition? The dash twos to Senate Bill 554 have been adopted. Senator Edwards?
Where are we moving this? Are we moving this to the floor?
I believe we're moving this to the floor.
There's no specific recommendation to move it to Ways and Means, yeah. But it does have a fiscal, so we could.
Minimal fiscal?
No, it does have there's a fiscal impact.
How big?
100-some thousand.
156
in 2011. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 554 as amended to Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Edwards has moved Senate Bill 554 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass. Discussion.
Where's the
Any opposition? Senate Bill 554, as amended, is moved to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation, unanimous. Close the work session on 554. Open the work session on Senate Bill 264. Richard.
Uh, 264 exempts county roads from the standards set for state highways to get new approach permit for a change of use of a private approach road. It requires the county court or board of county commissioners to adopt rules and regulations for the issuance of permits for use of right-of-way of county roads. It requires an emergency effective on passage. Yes, this is there is a dash one amendment. This is the access management bill. There's an indeterminate fiscal impact statement and no revenue impact on the dash ones, and there is a discussion of another amendment coming in the building.
Another amendment coming. Oh,
but I have not seen it.
Robin?
Yes.
Jerry? Whoever? Ah, there we go.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee. Bob Bryant with Oregon Department of Transportation. And I understand also that a second amendment is forthcoming by stakeholders who have been working on a couple of the incomplete items that the Access Management Stakeholder Committee had identified over the last few months. In addition, ODOT had is in the process of reviewing the Legislative Council draft amendments to 264 as well.
Uh-huh. So we shouldn't move it today.
I think that would be the recommendation of the agency.
Okay. Discussion? Is anybody else who wanted to comment on this? Sounds like we're waiting for an amendment. Don't see any. Wait for the amendment. So we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 264. Wait for that amendment to arrive. Let's see. We have 967. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 967. Richard.
967 repeals existing statutes governing the adjustment of public utility rates to account for taxes paid by electricity and natural gas utility. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. We heard this last week on April 5th.
Any comments, Senator Atkinson? Charge. We are in work session. Do you want to move?
Mr. Chair, I'd move. Senate Bill 967. The dash. What are we on now?
I don't think there's an amendment on there.
I don't think there's an amendment.
There's no amendment.
Move the bill, sir.
Move the bill. Was that a due pass?
A due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 967 to the floor with a due pass. Discussion. No discussion. Is there any opposition? No opposition? Senate Bill 967 is moved to the floor with a due pass by unanimous vote of the committee. Senator Atkinson, would you like to carry?
Charge.
Senator Atkinson will carry. And in committee. I think we've just kind of gone through everything we needed to. For the record, we are carrying over. We are carrying over all the bills that were not moved today. Any further business before the committee? Seeing none, we are adjourned. The,